Thank you very much for those kind words, and I will try to do what you asked me to do. So this is a very, very timely report. It comes just before the end of the Millennium Development Goals period, and it explores four very important recent trends in the area of economic development and the role that the WTO had to play. If one were to take a very quick and rash look at the contribution of the WTO for economic development, it may conclude that not much has been done in the last 10 or 13 years. So since the Doha Development Agenda started, we have very little to show. But as the report shows, this would have been a very rash and quick conclusion. There is a lot that the WTO can do in terms of contributing to economic development, and this is very well explained throughout the report. What I'm going to do is, in the 12 minutes that I have left, take you through my takeaways from this report. And then I'm going to get into a wish list. So I'm going to play the discussion role and try to tell you why I would have liked perhaps the report to be a little bit more critical sometimes. And I would also have liked the report to be a little bit more constructive, in particular in terms of future negotiating agendas. And I'm going to talk, if I have some time, about a topic that is dear to me, which is the topic of income inequality, and try to illustrate what this more daring negotiating agenda could do to challenges, issues that are very important for all of us today. And then a few words on again, a wish list of what I would like the future World Trade Reports to do a little bit more of. So the takeaways, I'm not going to take you again through these four large trends. They are extremely important. Developing countries are catching up. The global value chains are more and more important, and they are more and more important for developing countries all over the world, in some regions more than others. But in general, developing countries are participating more in this global value chains. The agricultural boom and its importance for trade and development, and the more important synchronization of macroeconomic shocks around the world due to this globalization phenomenon that has implications for development. And the report is about what can the WTO, given these four trends that are clearly identified over the last 10 years, what can the WTO do to make the most out of these four trends for economic development? Let me just a few words on something that Robert didn't touch upon and has to do with income inequality, to which I'm going to come later, maybe on the first trend, on the fact that developing countries are catching up with the North. If you look at it from the angle of income inequality, if you look at the very first chapter of the report has an historic perspective on the evolution of globalization and the evolution of income inequality that is fascinating, very informative, and I will recommend my students at least to read it. What you learn there is that income inequality since the beginning of the 19th century has been steadily increasing around the world. And here I'm not talking Thomas Piketty income inequality. Thomas Piketty is worried about the income inequality within France, the income inequality within the United States. What I'm worried here about is the income inequality of all citizens in the world, where you have people in India, you have people in Uruguay, you have people in the United States, and you look at the entire world income inequality. Well, that has been rising since the beginning of the 19th century, steadily, until 2005, 2007. And since then, it has been coming down. Why has been coming down? Because of this catch-up phenomenon by developed countries. And why developed countries has been catching up? I think we have very little evidence, and the report doesn't go as far as what I'm going to say, but I believe that one of the reasons developing countries has been catching up and income inequality has declined is because of the liberalization in the developing world that started in the middle of the 1980s. If you look at China and Brazil, the average tariff in China and Brazil in 1985 was 40%, 50%. Today it's 8 and 11. So this tremendous liberalization that occurred during the 90s is paying off now, by the middle of the 2000s, with this catching up, an income inequality at the world level, not within France and within the United States, there it's increasing, but at the world level declining because of this catching up. And definitely the WTO has a role to play and has contributed to that. So the reports will offer you a greater analysis of these four current trends, a very informative discussion. I learned loads from this. As usual in the World Trade Reports, they have make us a habit of this. They provide an unparalleled synthesis of the literature on these topics. So it's a very informed, very, very thorough synthesis of the literature on this topic. But, and here comes the discussion role, I think it remains a little bit too macro in terms of the role played by the WTO, and I'm going to say a little bit more about this later. I think it's a little bit too positive, too kind on the WTO, on the contribution of the WTO, and there is stuff out there that you should... When you are the WTO and you're doing an assessment of the WTO, you should be the first one to hit yourself. Otherwise, other people are going to do it, and that's why I'm here. And maybe a little bit too timid in identifying the challenges for the negotiating agenda. I would have liked to see much more. There's so much to be said, and sometimes I feel that there was a little bit of more daring that would have been very useful. So it could have been more critical, and it could have been more constructive at the same time around the topic of trade and development. So more critical. So a lot is attributed to the WTO in terms of the impacts it has. So there is a very large literature that is trying to show and that is summarizing the report that tries to show whether the WTO, being member of the WTO, contributes to growth in international trade. And you have the basic paper that you have probably all heard about by Andy Rose that shows that actually being a member of the WTO has no impact. And then a very large literature trying to do things better and sometimes conclude that WTO has a role and sometimes conclude that it doesn't. Now, there is a very recent paper. To tell you why you have to be very careful with this is that the econometric techniques and the statistical techniques that we have available today to show the impact of something like the WTO at the macro level are not good enough. Very recently, Chodine, Hayes, and Hicks wrote a paper to show that being a member of the WTO reduces cancer in your country. And I think that even Keith couldn't argue that. Rather, if he was going to argue that, I will probably be convinced. But the authors of this study, their point is, nobody here believes that the WTO cures cancer, right? But if you put instead of international trade as an explanatory variable, you put the number of cancer patients in a country, you will have exactly the same impact that if you put international trade. Hmm. And that's because of the statistical methods that are using to do that. Another thing that they did, these guys, is to, instead of looking at the impact of being a member of the WTO on international trade, they look at the impact of being a member of CITES, the Convention on Trade in Endangered Species. And being a member of CITES has exactly the same impact as being a member of the WTO on international trade. So you have to be very careful in terms of when you attribute causality to things, and I think a more critical view of how well the WTO has played would be welcome. I think this is the perfect place to undertake this more critical view. What you need is more micro studies and more interdisciplinary studies. And here you have the expertise and the talent to do so. So I think we need to understand better what works in the WTO and what doesn't work for promoting trade, for promoting development. And future World Trade Reports can do that, could do that. More critical also on the search of protectionists. I don't think we all agree about what has happened during the crisis in terms of protectionists. There is the global trade alert out there that suggested that there was an important increase in protectionists in the early periods of the crisis in 2009. It has declined between 2010 and 2012, but is up again in 2013 and to some extent in 2014. So protectionists hasn't been totally muted by the WTO during this financial crisis. And if you look at studies that look at how protectionism has evolved, over these 5-6 year period. It's true that it's not as big as what we observe in the 1930s with the Smoot-Hawley Act and the reaction of Europe on this. But it's also true that this absence of huge increases in protectionism is observed for WTO members, but also for non-WTO members. So non-WTO members didn't react with huge increases in protectionism during the crisis. So it's not only the WTO which is explaining this very this lack of increases in protectionism. Let me move now to the more constructive areas where I think the WTO could have looked. The report does a very thorough job of identifying areas and discussing very important areas for international trade and for society and development in general today. One of them is the environment and the role that trade has to play in the environment, and there are very interesting discussions about this. What would have been nice is to see what the presence of the environment and the challenges that the environment brings to the negotiating agenda in international trade, how they can be incorporated. How should we tackle these questions? Are we happy with Article 20B? I'm not. I don't think it's enough. I think the environment is much bigger than Article 20B, and that there is, my opinion is mine. But if we are happy with it, I think we need to discuss it. Trade and labor standards is also a very important area. Should we leave these to regional trade agreements to deal with? A more thorough discussion of this negotiating agenda would have been. And then trade and income inequality. Shall we ignore all these discussions about the top 1%? The increases in income inequality within countries, now I'm talking, the increases in income inequality within countries in the south and in the north, or is there something that the WTO can do to tackle these big issues? So the environment, labor standards, inequality. I think these are big issues, and part of my opinion of the mistake of what the WTO has been doing in terms of WTO members have been doing in terms of deciding their negotiating agenda over the last 13 years is that they have been focusing on the low-hanging fruits. And I think the important issues that need to be tackled are being left aside, or we don't dare to touch them. I think that, from an institutional point of view, is a mistake. On inequality, do I still have 2 minutes?
Yep.
Do? Okay, on inequality and the rise of inequality, Thomas Piketty and all that, what does trade theory tell us? Trade theory, it was a mess, I think, in terms of the what it can tell you of the impact of trade on inequality until what we call the new trade theory, that gave a role for heterogeneity in international trade. And what is this role for heterogeneity? Well, we have now firms that are heterogeneous, that are different. Some are more productive than others. Workers that are different. Some are more productive than others. Some have higher income or less income than others. And now we can start talking about income inequality. If you look back at the traditional trade theory that you and I learned in school, we had one firm, a representative firm, a representative consumer. If we were lucky, we had two types of workers. How can you talk about income inequality in a framework that doesn't allow for income inequality by definition? There is only one guy out there. So you needed this new trade theory to be able to tackle these questions. And what the new trade theory tells us, and this comes from a study for using Brazilian data with Brazilian firms, tell us is that at very early stages of globalization, when the share of firms in a country participating in global market is very small, if you increase the number of countries that are participating in global markets, you're going to increase inequality. So at the beginning of the globalization process, globalization is going to lead to an increase in inequality. Why is that? Well, because at the beginning of the globalization process, the only firms that are going to be able to benefit of exports and the global market are going to be the larger, more productive firms. Mm-hmm. And they are going to be able to benefit from the big market. The smaller firms, less productive firms, are going to stay only in the domestic market. And therefore, as more of these larger firms participate in the global market, you have inequality rising with respect to these less productive firms. But then you reach a point where there is a sufficient large amount of firms that are entering the export market, and these least productive firms are able to enter as trade costs decline, as globalization deepens, and by these mechanisms, you will have a decline in income inequality as globalization deepens. This is the data for Brazil. The work done by Heldman, Mundler, Redding tells you that when you will reach 40% of Brazilian firms participating in global markets, exporting, when you reach that number, 40%, income inequality and globalization will start to inequality will decline as globalization deepens. But you need to get to that magic 40% number. Mm-hmm. Before that, what we have been observing is that as globalization increases, trade is contributing to the increase in inequality in Brazil. Why? Because today the share of Brazilian firms that export is 10%. So the problem that we have is not that there is too much globalization. The problem that we have is that there is not enough globalization. There are only 10% of firms participating. Once we get to the other side of that 40% number, well, then globalization will start declining. And the question is, how do we get there? Because the problem is that as you deepen globalization, inequality increases, and this can become less sustainable. Well, one thing that can help us do that is online platforms. Here you have the share of firms. I don't have Brazil, but I have the share of firms in Chile, Indonesia, India, Jordan, Peru, Thailand, Ukraine, and South Africa that export in offline markets, in traditional markets if you want offline, and that's in red. And in blue, you have the share of firms that sell in online platforms that export. Now that's 100% in all these countries. So what these online platforms allow to do is they allow to reduce trade costs in a tremendous way so that even the smallest firms are able to access the global market. So thinking about what the WTO can do, and there are many barriers to online trade, we don't have time to discuss this, but thinking about what the WTO can do to regulate this online trade and regulate the services associated, so postal services are going to be very important here, to regulate these things and make this happen is something that can contribute in a tremendous way to reduce income inequality around the world. Future World Trade Report, a wish list. I think I would like to see narrower, more micro questions instead of staying at the macro approach. Have more interdisciplinary analysis. Again, this is the place to have this. You have the best international trade lawyers. You have the best international trade economists. They working together and providing an interdisciplinary analysis of these important issues, I think, is going to be a huge contribution for all of us. Perhaps being a little bit more critical of the WTO, daring to be a little bit more critical, are more constructive on the negotiating agenda and the institution of the WTO. Thank you very much.